And welcome to When Pigs Fly. And I bet you all thought I was going to sing for you, huh? Or have a song or something. Well, actually, I'm going to be starting possibly next week or the following week a new intro song. And I'll still be popping in songs from various artists from the past and hopefully maybe add some more, getting little taste tidbits there, here and there. But I'm doing a rechanging, a reorganization of stuff. And because we are in that month called Retrograde, I thought it was always privy to do it at this time. Also, I want to tell everybody, I want to first of all thank everybody for listening in and all the future listeners as well. Again, this is Andrew Federer at When Pigs Fly. I just want to make a couple announcements. You've probably heard it in the past. For those who are living within the Los Angeles area, I am still doing readings at Psychic Eye Bookstore in Sherman Oaks, California. I do those on Sunday from 11 a.m. through 9 p.m. and on Monday from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. and Wednesday from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. Only 3 days. The number to call is 818-906-8263 to schedule an appointment. Of course, you can check that out on my directly on BBS Radio's website that has on When the Pigs Fly. Also, starting in September, I will, and I feel honored to do this, is I will be teaching practical Kabbalah and esoterics at the same facility in Psychic Eye Bookstore. And it will start on September 15th at 7:30 to 9:30. On Thursdays, every Thursday. I think exclusion of one Thursday, I think we're skipping because of a Jewish holiday. But it will be 7 classes. It is basically to develop and learn to heal oneself within a greater self-worth, self-love, along with a greater understanding of the universal love and joy within the universe. Broaden the utilization of universes and God's love that is infinitely around, which transcends from individual to all humanity. And as well as develop a keen awareness and deeper understanding of the wisdom held within our infinite universe and its endless capacities. The class will include the teaching of very fundamentals of the essence of Kabbalah, including spiritual concepts in relation to healing, guides, karma, tikkun, life and death, dreams, out of body, also known as Merkava, reincarnation, meditation, manifestation. I'm sure everybody wants to know about creating and manifesting as well in these times, as well as other metaphysics held within the path of Kabbalah. For information, just go ahead and contact and it's going to be very cheap too. It's $10 a class, mind you, so that's very, very reasonable. This is a limited time I'm doing this. So again, contact them. The number over at Psychic Eye Bookstore is 818-906-8263, and that will begin on September 15th. Again, there will be limited seating due to the nature of the class. I'm trying to give as much attention as possible. So the first one's first serve, so try to get all your classes paid in full up front if you can. That would be great. Otherwise, it's pay as you go and take your chance. Otherwise, I look forward to meeting each and every one of you who can come out. This is a learning experience for all of us. I learn as well as you learn, as we learn through the understandings. Again, the number is 818-906-8263. Now, I've noticed there's been, since the dilemma of what's happened since 2008 with our situation and our economy, and this is not just in the U.S., but pretty much worldwide, people have basically, freaked out, and understandably so. There's a lot of dilemma of what has happened. And I hear a lot of complaints, people complaining all the time about their situation. What I find is sort of what's more discerning is that I find that most people who complain about their situation have no clue or refuse to understand anything about their economics that they're subject to. If you ask the average person, do you know what the Federal Reserve is in the United States? Most of them don't know, but they'll complain about spending and the government spending and, you know, taxes and economics and their foreclosures and blah, blah, blah. You know, the same thing in the overseas. I mean, they have a central banking. It's developed through what is called the Bank of England, which I'm not going to get into, but the relationship is very much the same. So I'm going to focus here just basically on the Federal Reserve because that's the question. And most people have no clue what it is, so I'm just going to lay it out what really is the Federal Reserve and how it got to be what it is. I think it's very imperative that we understand it, and therefore then you understand why we are in this predicament today, and we will always be in this cycle of predicament of economics. First of all, the Federal Reserve is a central bank. It's a central bank which is are supposed to implement a country's fiscal policies. They are supposed to monitor commercial banks to ensure that they maintain a sufficient amount of assets like cash or so on, so as to remain solvent and stable. Central banks also do the business such as the currency exchanges and gold transactions and other as well as with other central banks. Now, in theory, a central bank would seem really good for a country, and it would. That is, if they weren't not, you know, if they were controlled by the government or the public sector or was actually serving the country. But what happens is when it's a private central bank, such as the Federal Reserve, it operates not in the interest of the public good, but for profit. Now, I'm going to explain there's three basic central banks that the United States had in its history. This is the third we're in right now. We've had it since 1913. The first two, while being deceptive and fraudulent in their own mind, pale in comparison to the scope and size of the fraud being perpetrated by our current Federal Reserve. Now, what they have in common is an insidious practice also known as fractional banking. And give me a little financial teaching here. Fractional banking, or also called fractional lending, is the ability to create money from nothing and lending it to a government or someone else and charging interest along with it. The practice evolved before banks even existed. Back in the day, goldsmiths would rent out a space in their vaults, for example, to individuals and merchants for storage of their silver and gold. Well, the goldsmiths gave these depositors a certificate that showed the amount of gold that was stored. Now, these certificates then were used to conduct business. In the time, the goldsmiths noticed that the gold in their vaults was rarely withdrawn. I mean, it was pretty much small amounts would move in and out. But the large majority just sat there. So sensing an opportunity to make some profit out of this, the goldsmith issued what was known as double receipts for their gold, in effect creating money certificates from nothing. They would then lend these certificates out, creating a debt to the depositors and then charging interest for them. Since the certificates represented more than the gold actually existed, the certificates were actually fractionally backed by the gold. Eventually, some of these vault operations were transferred to banks and even common banks of today. And the practice of fractional banking continued. Keeping in mind what the fractional banking concept in mind was and is, we must first examine the first federal, first central bank, or the first bank of the United States, central bank. And it was created after a lot of dissent in the Congress in 1791, and it chartered approximately 20 years, or exactly 20 years. And this was definitely a scam, not unlike our current Federal Reserve, but nonetheless, it used its own control of the currency to defraud the public and establish a legal form of usury. Usury, by the way, is the way of interest and making money off of nothing. This bank practice, fractional banking, lending at at a rate of 10 to 1, that means $10, you know, $1 for every $10. You can have like $1 in assets, and then $10 would be lent out against the $1. That's what the fractional banking, so you keep that one 10 to 1. Dollars would then be lent out against the deposit. Now, this misuse and abuse of their public charter continued for about 20 years of their existence. So the public got pretty much outraged over these abuses, and was such that they eventually, the charter was extinguished, and it was not ever renewed, and the bank ceased to exist in 1811. Now, the War of 1812 occurred, and that left the country in economic chaos. And, of course, seen by the bankers at this opportunity for easy money-making profit, right? They influenced Congress to charter the second central bank. The central bank, we'll call it SBSUS, which is the Central Bank of the United States, was established in 1816. Again, they still did the 10-to-1 ratio. Now, I'm just going to remind you, 10-to-1, just remember those mortgages being sold at leverages beyond 10-to-1. They would take these leverage, these same mortgages, and then were turned into like semi-assets, and then loaned again for mortgages, and so on and so on. And then even leverage to buy, you know, stocks, and et cetera, and things like that. So you can see how what would happen with the collapse and why the collapse occurred. In fact, the collapse was actually manufactured, if you think about it. It was deliberately to set up for the fall. It was sort of obvious, because then what happened was everybody would lose all their assets, and then who comes in back and buying these up? At 10 cents to the dollar with your money, AIG, Deutsche National, with your taxes. Of course, they got a little bonus for doing it, too. Now, in Vegas, having lived there for 10 years, they would call you a sucker. Yeah, us, you, me, the whole world, whoever you're involved, are suckers. We're all suckers to the banks, because they just are basically screwing us. And we all know who owns the banks, the same owners of what the late George Carlin talked about. Of course, you ain't one of them unless you're a royalty of England and your last name happens to be Rockefeller, Rothschild, or Morgan. Yep, and they're at that top of that little pyramid with the eye looking at you. But nevertheless, just keep that in mind. The same circumstance that you see on that ratio that I just talked about, fractional banking and manipulating and borrowing out of nothing, is the process that's being manipulated with us. Now, the second Bank of the United States was actually more expansive than the first one. The second Central Bank of the United States sold franchise and literally doubled the number of banks in a short period of time. Now, the country began to boom. They started moving westward, which required more money, and they continued utilizing the fractional lending at a 10-to-1 ratio. The central bank and their franchise created the depth for money for expansion. Now, things began to boom for a while, but then the banks decided to shut off the money and the debt. Why? Think about it. They make inflation, everything clunky, everything going boom. And then they say, well, we have to sort of control inflation or control things. So what they do, they drop down the distribution of monies, thereby, you know, lowering, you know, the rate. And this action on the turn part of the caused the part of the bankruptcies and foreclosures incurred by the central bank, the second one, bankruptcies and foreclosures. Of course, what did the banks do? Then they took over the assets that were then used as security against their loans. And this was the recycling. It was sort of obvious what was going on. Now, closely examining how the central bank entered this cycle of prosperity and depression, the central bank would literally cause inflation by creating a money debt for loans and creating credit and making these funds readily available. Sound familiar? It made it here easy to get the loans for buy your house, initiate your business, blah, 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 blah. And then what do? Of course, make it, the economy think it's in a boom or doing well or somehow feasible. And suddenly that shut off. Now, the resulting short of cash caused the economic to falter and slow dramatically in this case. And large numbers of businesses and personal bankruptcies were resulted. The central bank then, what do? They seized the assets. They used the security for the loans. The wealth then created by the borrowers during the boom was then transferred to the central bank during the bust. Now, this is what they call is real redistribution of wealth. Not what people keep on hearing in politics. Like it's socialist or whatever. But the redistribution of wealth went from the average people to the one percenters on top, who then are actually, they themselves are owned. Okay? It just went straight up to the top. And you'll notice how there's now less banks than there were, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, how all the banks collapsed. Because what they were doing, centralizing the monies. Why is it that all of a sudden the U.S. was, the Federal Reserve got in action and the international fund money, the IMF was involved with lending out money, and you know, I'll get into that with Greece and all that, but it made a movement to take over our country's own assets. And then there was less banks, as I spoke of. So the resulting cause and the shortages were literally then, you know, and like in 2008 is what happened. I mean, look what's happening right now with the EU. We had Ireland basically sell its children to keep itself feasibly from fiscally sound. Greece just did that just now, which I don't think they're going to make it. And then still, even with all the money he's got, Spain is on its way, Italy is on its way, Portugal. So you can see what's going on. In the U.S., well, we all know about this phenomenon with the foreclosures, falling businesses, loss of jobs. Oh, we got a slight increase, but that's sort of a joke. You saw the crash in the market of 400 points. That was to re-centralize the assets. But don't worry, America, because you will have a job. That's their plan. They want you to keep on working, but work for a lot less. That's my thesis. That's my theory. I feel they're in the U.S. it's going to be a little bit different than the EU. They will just make people work a lot harder and more, and for a lot less in the United States, while the rest of the world is actually, well, mainly in the European nations, are going to just basically lose everything. Now, who do you think is responsible for all the ups and downs in our economy for over the last 85 years? Think about it. There was a depression in the 20s, and then in the late 20s, right? And all the way through the 30s. And what did the Fed do? They could have, if they wanted to, during that time, pumped a whole lot of cash into the market to stimulate the economy. And this is exactly what they could have done if they wanted to. Remember, everybody said the stimulus, blah, 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 and the stimulus package. Now, the government can't make that happen. To stimulate money. They can't create the money from out of air. The federal does. They can take the money from the government and, you know, build infrastructure and have people money going out, but that doesn't really do it. What really does it is if the Federal Reserve goes, excuse me, I'm going to pour out a whole bunch of cash out there, devaluating the dollar, which is basically what's going to do. It's going to cause inflation. It's going to throw so much money into the arena that business all of a sudden will start having a lot of cash available and, excuse me, and lo and behold, it'll be back to prosperity temporarily, and the cycle will happen again. Now, why would the Fed do this? During the past period, of assets and values and stocks were when they were at rock bottom prices, who do you think was going to go start buying every asset 10 cents of the dollar? Again, who do you think? Now, I believe that it's referred to as consolidating wealth. Oh, gee, does that sound familiar? Or some people call it redistributing the wealth, but it's more consolidation of wealth. You will notice that in the last 10 years, the wealthier are getting wealthier, and the poor are getting poorer, and the middle class is sort of like disappearing. And that's been happening continuously in the last 20 years. Do you think, well, I mean, you know, just think about it. What do you think they'll do again? Think of all our little episode we had back in 2008 with TARP. I mean, there's all this TARP money that came out of the government, out of our taxes, trillions, that they said we didn't have money, we don't have money to spend now, right? And that, no, people forget that TARP money was paid to back to the banks. Well, who took that TARP money supposedly to buy back the lowered assets back, right? 10 cents a dollar. So in other words, they got the banks got subsidized by our own taxes, that the money they borrowed from the bank in the first place, from the Federal Reserve, and by our own taxes that we slaved away to pay the banks back to buy back property at 10 cents a dollar. That's a really good gamut, I would say. So just as as point aside, just take a look at the economy today with our markets declining, like just recently dropping. Why? Because the Fed has been very liberal with its credit and its money situation. And when that market was hyperinflated, which they do, then what they do is they create a sudden inflation or recession. The Fed decides it. Now, governments and politicians do not rule central banks. Central banks rule governments and politicians. You know, it isn't the government who tells Bernanke or the chairman of any Federal Reserve what the policies are to be. It's the other way around, if you've ever noticed it. So let me give you an example. President Jackson, back in who won the presidency, you know, back in 1828, with the promise to end the national debt, first thing he did was he eliminated what? The central bank. Now, here's a good example. If you want to eliminate the national debt in the United States, you get rid of the Federal Reserve. That would eliminate 90% of our debt in an instant. Now, during his second term, President Jackson withdrew all government funds from the bank. And then on January 8th, 1835, he paid off the national debt. He is the only president in history to have had this distinction, by the way. And then that charter expired in 1836. Now, without a central bank to manipulate the supply of money, the United States of America, and this is a fact, had experienced an unprecedented growth in its history for over 60 to 70 years. And the resulting wealth was so much that the bankers just couldn't believe it. How, what are they going to do? So they had to get back to their game. And what did they do? In 1910, Senator Nelson Aldrich, who, by the way, is the voice of J.P. Morgan, who happens to be married to a Rockefeller, his wife is a Rockefeller, coincidence, who happened to be then the chairman of the National Monetary Commission, in a collusion with also several other named European bankers, i.e., Bowers, or a.k.a. known as Rothschilds, and the Windsor family, the Queen of England, and so on, devised a plan to pressure and deceive the Congress in acting legislation that would covertly establish a private central bank. Now, this bank would assume and control over the American economy by controlling the issuance of its currency, its own money. After a huge public relations campaign engineered by these banks, the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 was slipped through the Congress. By the way, you realize 1913 was right before World War I. Just think about that. Was slipped through Congress during the Christmas recess, while many of the members of Congress who were not so happy about it got it through. And President, of course, Woodrow Wilson, with his political and financial backers being pressured by him, supposedly, signed into act on December 23rd, 1913, 2 days before Christmas. So think about that. Or a Christmas present. The act created the Federal Reserve System, a name carefully, by the way, selected, designed to deceive. Federal would lead one to believe that this is a government organization, which it is not. is outside of the government. It doesn't have elected officials. You don't know who they are. You have a chairman who acts as a liaison between the politicians and those who actually run it. Now, the reserve would tend to lead you to believe that the currency is being backed by gold or silver. It isn't. The system was in lieu of the word bank. So that one would not conclude that a central bank had really been created. In reality, the act created a private banking corporation owned by the cartel of private banks. And who owns the Fed? The Rothschilds, who are known as real name are Bowers, the Windsors, hail to the Queen, the Rockefellers, and the Morgans. Now, you all want to know why the Bank of England never had the euro? Think about it. Well, who owns the Bank of England? Who really owns the Bank of England? It's owned by the Bowers, Rothschilds, and the Windsors. Now, did you know that the Federal Reserve is not only only for profit corporation in America, but it is exempt from paying any federal state taxes on its profits? The Fed takes in about $1 trillion per year tax-free. And this is old estimate. It's probably quadruple that. I mean, this estimate that I'm giving you is about 10 years old. So I'm giving you a guesstimate because nobody's really audited the Fed and got an established number. Now, the banking families listed above what I mentioned all get that money. Almost everyone thinks that the money that they pay in taxes goes to the U.S. Treasury to pay for the expenses of the government. Do you really want to know where your taxes really go? If you look at the back of your check made out to the IRS, you'll see that it has been endorsed by Pay Any FRB Branch or General Deposit for Credit, U.S. Treasury. This is a payment of U.S. obligation. Yes, that's right. Every dime you pay in income tax is given to those private banking families known as the Federal Reserve, tax-free. It did not go to the Treasury. It went into the Federal Reserve. Like a monopoly money, which many of you sure are aware of, I personally have a difficulty dealing with this concept of creating money from nothing, and yet you have heard of the term monetizing the debt, which is the same thing. I have problems with that. As an example, if the United States wants to borrow $1 million, the government does not borrow every dollar it spends. It does. It literally borrows every amount of money that it spends. It has to. That's why they needed to raise the ceiling, because they wanted to spend more money or, you know, whatever. And then they want to limit it. Now, what they do is they go to the Fed, and what they borrow more money. The Fed calls the Treasury and say, let's say you want to print 10,000 Federal Reserve notes. By the way, it has notes on your dollar, doesn't not currency, and units of, let's say, $100. The Treasury will charge then, they used to, this is 10 years old, 2.3 cents for each note that's made, for a total of, let's say, $230 for 10,000, Federal Reserve notes. Right? But then the Fed then lends the $1 million for the bank at face value plus interest. Now, think about, do they really print all that money? To add insult to injury, the government has to create a bond, by the way, for $1 million as security for that same loan on top of that. And you've heard of the Treasury bonds, right? Now, this even gets better, because then that interest that the government pays goes directly again on top of the interest already paid to the Federal Reserve. So it's like double interest. The bubble just is an example of how it works. You know, I was explaining. And it, because in reality, the Federal Reserve does not even print the money. It's all computer entry in your accounting systems. So they even get more. It's made up. This is how I'm telling you how barbaric system and how we live. It's absolutely retarded if you think about it. And yet we move along like little rats in a cage. Anyway, today's banks are members of the Federal Reserve System. This membership makes it legal for them to create money from nothing and to lend it to you. Today's banks, like the goldsmiths of old, realize that only a small fraction of the money deposited in their banks is actually ever really withdrawn in form of cash. Only about 4% of all money that exists in its currency form of currency, the rest is simply computer entry. Now, on top of that, you got to think about what banks do. They also charge, you know, those all those fees they do. The reason why they're doing that is because they've allowed more monies to come. They know it's going in and out. People have less money now, so they're making even more money by charging more different fees and more things. That's how they get around that, so they can make more money. They have to now. Now, let's say you borrow to, let's say, $10,000 to do some home improvements, and you know the bank didn't have to take that $10,000 pile of cash to give it, put it in your pile. What they do, they simply went into the computer, into their computer, and input entry of $10,000 in your account. That's it. Bing, bing. You have $10,000 created from thin air. Then the debt, which you have just now secure, you have to secure with an asset, you have to pay interest on top of it. The bank is allowed to do this and to create and lend as much as debt as long as it does not exceed the 10-to-1 ratio imposed by the Federal Reserve. Do you understand? The bank can have, let's say, $1,000 in its accounts. They can take now, if they have $1,000 in their account, they can actually legally lend to you, out of $1,000 in the account, $10,000. It's fraud. They're lending you out of air. It sort of puts a new slant on how you think of how friendly your bank really is. You know, it's playing Monopoly. It's totally playing, you know, Houdini on everybody. And people need to wake up to the reality of our economics. That's why our monetary system is totally barbaric and fraud. It's an illusion. Now, how about these loan committees that are scrutinized, you know, with a microscope before approving a loan, and then they get created from thin air? Wow. They make it complex for a reason. The reason why they don't want you to understand what's really going on. So what they do is they impose fear. People fear what they do not understand. And you are so easily deluded and controlled when you are ignorant and afraid. This is the game. They play a game of making you fearful and ignorant. And that's what's going on. The consistency of when the economical collapse is imposed fear. Now, to put the frosting on the cake, when the income tax was created, by the way, do you know when it was? If you had guessed 1913, yeah, the same year the Federal Reserve was created, you would be right. Is that a coincidence? What are the odds? If you're going to use the Federal Reserve to create debt, who's going to repay the debt? So the income taxes were created to complete the illusion that real money had been lent, and therefore real money had to be repaid. I mean, that was a real good illusionary trick. Now, you must mind you, and this is on statute, in 1895, income tax was declared unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court. Wait, income tax is unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. There has never been a decision subsequent to that reversing that action, yet we pay taxes. So how is this done? Think about it. They did it in a roundabout way with the Federal Reserve Act. You volunteer. I mean, if you think about it, if we the people don't take some action now and come to realization we are the people, then we're never going to be existing. I mean, literally, you should write a letter, send email, whatever your representatives. How much of that would do? I don't know. But the more people who are aware of this, and even elected officials, I hate to tell you, don't even know their own Federal Reserve. I mean, you have a lot of ignorant people who are in our government, too, or our politicians. I think about it. I mean, if you look at our own Constitution, if there are any, it's very simple. Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution specifically says that Congress, is the only body that can coin money and regulate the value thereof. The Constitution has never been amended or allowed anyone other than Congress to coin and regulate currency. So, the Federal Reserve is actually unconstitutional. So why hasn't it ever been challenged? Out of ignorance and fear. Ask any of your representatives in light of all this information, how is it possible the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 and the Federal Reserve Act that was created to be constitution? Ask them why this is a private banking cartel which is allowed to reap trillions of dollars in profits without paying taxes. They won't even know what to answer you. They'll talk in corners. They'll say, oh, it's conspiracy made up, or because they themselves don't know. I mean, but here are the facts. Research it yourself. You will see it. These are the facts. This is a reality. If you go on Wikipedia and look up there, I was looking at just curious, they quickly bypass all this stuff. They will show that there's committees set up, blah, blah, blah. And they don't, and that there's certain functionality, that decisions are made of the central committees, but they never really go into the issuance of currency. There's a reason why, because that's part of the, they'll be caught. The magic trick will be caught. I mean, Thomas Jefferson said something, and I will reiterate this down the line. If the American people were ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currencies, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their prosperity until their children will wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. I mean, Jefferson saw this almost 200 years ago. The question is, can you now see what is in store for us or what's been happening right now? And allow the federal to continue to controlling our country. Now I'm going to reiterate again, and I repeat and I summarize. Just in case you didn't know, the Federal Reserve is a private company of bankers with 12 branches that confiscate our money. And they have been doing this for almost over 100 years. Almost 99, I guess, right? Oh, 90, whatever. They are not part of the United States government. Yet today, they collect hundreds of billions of dollars from American taxes every year. And you'll pay attention about how this is happening when you start reading about this scam that's been going on. I mean, Mr. Meyer Amschel Rothschild, his real name, Meyer Amschel Bayer, once said, "Let me issue a country's nation's money and care not who writes its laws." It's telling you something. Now, a little back, a rehash of some history again. It was Alexander Hamilton who lobbied for the first private federal bank in 1789, which was chartered. And of course, Thomas Jefferson was adamantly opposed to this idea of a privately owned federal bank since and he said, "I sincerely believe the banking institutions having the issuing of power of money are more dangerous to liberty than standing armies," quote unquote. I repeat, "I sincerely believe the banking institutions having the issuing power of money, your currency, whether it be dollars, euros, pounds, yen, baht, are more dangerous to liberty than standing armies." In 1811, President Madison, who was then Vice President of George Clinton, 1811, under President James Madison. There was a Vice President George Clinton broke the tied vote in the Congress to cast the bankers out, refusing to renew their charter. Unfortunately, it was President Madison who proposed a second United States privately owned central bank, and it came into existence. However, in 1836, like I said, President Jackson, overriding the Congress, closed it, and hit with his comment, "The bold effort the present bank had made to control the government are but premonitions of the fate that await the American people should they be deluded into a perpetuation of this institution or the establishment of another like it." We now have another one like it, don't we? He also said, Andrew Jackson, speaking of the bankers, "You are the den of vipers and thieves. I extend to rout you, and by the eternal God, I will rout you," blah, blah, blah. This is just all famous stuff he said, but that, I mean, it was the point. When Jackson was speaking when he tried closing up the Federal Reserve, the second one, he disclosed, and this is also on writing, this is a fact, that the bank is trying to kill me, but I will kill it first. Apparently, JFK should have gotten that warning. Now, the first two Federal Reserve systems lasted for 20 years, and we are now almost 100 years into the third one. In 1895, like I said, income tax was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. And Senator Nelson Eldridge proposed the income tax, by the way, also in 1913. And he happened to have been, again, the thinning voice of J.P. Morgan. And he was also married, like I said, to the Rockefeller family. Then came the Reserve. Woodrow Wilson. This is now 1913, the year after Woodrow Wilson was elected. Prior to his election, he needed to get financial support, pay for his command. So he reluctantly agreed that if he elected, he would sign the Federal Reserve Act. Gee, I wonder who backed him. Think about it. Sound familiar? Lobbyists, banking, pay him off, get him elected. Now we create what we want. And times haven't changed, have they? 1913, while many of the members of Congress were home, the Federal Reserve Act was rammed through the Congress and was signed later by President Wilson. At a later date, Wilson admitted with remorse when referring to the Fed, "I have unwillingly ruined my country." I mean, he literally sold his devil. He himself, who put an act, realized he had ruined the country. Note that all members that create the Federal Reserve are also the ones who created the Council of Foreign Affairs, who are also members of the Bilderbergs, who also sit involved with the Trilateral Commission, who also created the United Nations, who are part of the League of Nations. But what do I know? But what is the Fed? Like I said, it simply does what it does. It makes up notes, hypothetical currency, then it lends this hypothetical made-up currency, which has absolutely no real worth, to the federal government and the banks. And this made-up currency is then considered debt. And as it's printed, it says it's on its final page, it is a debt. Look at the thing, it says debt. It's a note that you think you're on an illusion to repay. This is the perpetual lending of the debt that you assume must be paid. Not one Federal Reserve note is backed by anything, not precious metal, nothing, such as gold, because it's the game, it's a monopoly game, where everyone is under the assumption that this is some kind of debt. It isn't. It's an illusion, a perpetual illusion of debt, keeping you like the little hamster running on the little wheel. And then it maintains that you and I are solely enslaved to pay back this debt by our labor. We are still in servitude. We have never been emancipated in the proclamation. Thus, we are slaves or voluntary servitude by the continued assumption that we must pay back all this stuff, all these debts. When you are born under the guise of debt. Thus, you are born in debt. This is why there is a constitution continuation of debt in the government, to make the assumption that you must work and pay this off. This is our monetary system in itself. It is an illusion. It is barbaric. we are freely volunteering by our own acceptance that it is illogical as a hamster running on a circular treadmill. You aren't going anywhere and you never will. The Federal Reserve made sure of that. Again, the Federal Reserve pays zero taxes. Why should it? It tells the government what to do. So now comes the income tax. We didn't have, nor did we need, an income tax until we had got the bankers back. The income tax was only needed to pay interest to the bankers for money that was lent. Yes, you read that right. The Federal Reserve, mostly on paper, then, and on computer, creates money and pays the Treasury a small printing fee for the currency. But it's really, since it's all computer imposition, doesn't pay anything. Our taxes then pay the interest in these loans, these made-up loans, that cost the feds virtually nothing to make. That's a pretty good deal. I mean, think of the trillions and trillions of the national debt. What do they say? I don't even know how many trillions of dollars. 2006, it was $8.2 trillion. I forgot what they said. It was just recently. And how much taxpayers have to pay back through the federal system in interest alone? 173879. I was looking at some records. I was like, I mean, it's in the trillions on debt alone. Since this article, so I'm just being getting to the issue of it. The United States will never be able to pay the interest back, let alone the principal. It's set up like that. In actuality, the elected officials are beholden to the bankers because now they are being financed by the bankers. You'll notice that when there was ever a question of auditing, all of a sudden, and this is a fact, you'll see approximately anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 was suddenly put in the coffers of every single congressman and senator. Shut up. And it done. And what happened? They never had a real audit. Now they have a pretend audit that's now coming on, but it's not a real audit. The real general audit that was proposed by Congressman Paul was diluted and called whack job, and they redid it and made one that was basically having, you know, the wolves checking, watching the hen house, basically. You know, all that happens. Now, here's another issue. There was a famous article or book written by a guy named Bill Benson and a guy named, I believe, Red Beckman, and it was called The Law That Never Was. People assumed that the 16th Amendment, which created the IRS, but was never ratified, not even by one state. The 16th Amendment was never ratified, and it's a fact. But yet it's considered an amendment. How the hell did that happen? Think about it. Not one of the most likable guys in my definition. Henry Ford even said, I quote, "It is well enough that the people of the nation do not understand our banking or monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning." So I say, wake up, America. Wake up, people in the world. Your economic situation isn't by chance. It's not because of the way the market happened to be. It was manipulated so you would be in this situation. The Federal Reserve has been in existence for almost 100 years. It has never been audited, truly audited. And they don't ever pay any taxes on any of the billions upon billions they've ever taken. According to the congressional record in the United States, government can buy back the Federal Reserve at any time for $450 million. That's about half the price, right? They could buy it back. So why isn't it being done? Do we have the most stupid or most corrupt leaders in the world or what? It seems that the number one concern is just getting reelected. That seems like shirking off their own responsibilities or just playing into selling their souls to the devil. Congress, though, likes the Fed because they can spend all they want with no restraints and pass it on to grandchildren. Hear them all, well, we're trying to restrict from our, but they're full of shit. Even the Republicans. Even the people who call themselves, you know, the tea bagging party or whatever they want to call them, they're the same bullshitters. They're full of shit. They're not real. It's a game. If they did, they would initiate it. There has only been one person in the United States in over 50 years that had initiated to try to dissolve the Federal Reserve. Unfortunately, he was killed in Texas, in Dallas. You may have never been a big fan of John F. Kennedy, but if you saw what he tried to do, you'd see him in a different light, how he tried to take on the feds. He had the foresight to see what a bad deal had been struck in creation of the Federal Reserve. He had the courage enough to do something about it, which unfortunately cost him his life. On June 4th, 1963, President Kennedy signed a presidential decree, Executive Order 11110. This virtually stripped the Federal Reserve Bank of its power to loan money to the United States government at interest. Kennedy then declared the privately owned Federal Reserve would soon be out of business. This order also gave the Treasury Department the authority to issue, which it was to take its responsibility, to issue its silver certificate dollars against any silver in the Treasury. This executive order still stands. But what happens is, in less than 5 months after signing this executive order, President Kennedy was assassinated on November 22nd, 1963. The first thing that LBJ was reverse executive order 1110. The United States notes, the silver certificates he had issued were immediately taken out of circulation. The Federal Reserve continued on with its reserve notes and continuing to serve as the legal currency of this nation. It is estimated there's 99.9% of all U.S. paper currency circulating in the United States, that's as of 1999, are Federal Reserve notes. Like I said, follow the money. When you follow the money, you find there was no one in the world who had a better reason to kill JFK than the bankers. This might be a hypothesis. This may be a theory, a conspiracy. Think about it. You know, when someone kills a wife or a husband, and there's a suddenly out of nowhere an issuance like a week before that there was an insurance, life insurance thing created by the husband or wife, and then suddenly the person killed out of mysterious reasons. Normally, everybody would not say that was a conspiracy theory. They go, wow, there was motive. Get it? This is not theory. This is motive. And based upon that motive, you would do research. Unfortunately, all those involved were quickly put away, like Ruby and everybody. Shut up. Killed. Disappeared. Is it a conspiracy? Or was there motive? I mean, think about all the people that had died because of that. Think about who his family is associated. What even Carolyn Kennedy herself, being what she had to sell herself to keep herself living. Ed Kennedy. Is this proof? No. But there is a very strong circumstantial evidence. I mean, the Federal Reserve centralizing the bank was met with much opposition from politicians. And from who? But yet, the one that carried it through, Aldrich, had close ties to who? J.P. Morgan? J.P. Morgan, and he was married to the daughter of John D. Rockefeller. That's who Aldrich was married to. I mean, think about all the stuff that's going on. Concern without action is a waste of time. The Federal Reserve, United Nations, Council of Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergs, these aren't hitting special little entities. They system set up for one purpose. It's not over just money, it's over power, power of you. There's no such thing as really money. It's power control. So they can live like what they want to do and continue to do what they want. It's control and power. So why are you complaining about the economy, the debts, and taxes? How much is our government spending, all whoopee, when it's all bullshit? Are you just afraid? Do you want to just continue to play the ostrich with your ass up in the air so every banker, Windsor, Bauer, Rothschild, or Morgan, or Rockefeller can fuck you some more? Only we, you, me, we can save this republic, our earth, our freedom, our rights. Carol Quigley, who was a professor at Georgetown University, who happened to be President Clinton's mentor, said this: they want nothing less to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole, controlled in a feudalistic fashion by central banks of the world and acting in concert by secret meetings arrived at secret and private conferences. Thomas Jefferson once said, and I paraphrase because I change this to be more modern: we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men and women are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator, God, Allah, with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men and women, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any government, any form of government, becomes destructive of these means, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute a new government. Oh yeah, that's in our Declaration of Independence. And I reiterate what Thomas Jefferson had once said: I sincerely believe that the banking institutions have the issuing power of money are more dangerous to liberty than standing armies. He also said, and I once again I reiterate, if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their prosperity until their children will wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. Isn't that what's happening? Is Thomas Jefferson a prophet or what? But on the path, on a spiritual vision above all this pathetic game of risk of economics, this pathetic game of illusionary perceptions of separation, the creation of segregation amongst ourselves, this illusion that we are separated from a God, separated from Earth, separated from each other, which has manifested into this cancer while allowing us to assume creating these symptoms, these disease called the Federal Reserve, these disease of barbarism, the disease of ignorance, to ignore. That's where the word comes from, ignorance. We step beyond above this pathetic game of risk. We can indeed overcome with our spiritual understanding, with our understanding that we are all one consciousness. When we merge our understanding and receiving and opening our minds and ears for what the universe and the nature is indeed communicating to us, when we remove this illusion of divorcing ourselves from our universe, the vision, hate, and fear of this cancer of divorce will then simply evaporate. And with my words, all I will say, we are one. We are one universe, one consciousness. We are connected to each other. We're connected to God, to the universe. There is no division. There's no such thing. So with all that, I wish you all God bless and have a glorious, glorious weekend. And thank you for listening. And next week, I have a special show that I've had in my mind. It is for during this time period. It will be for during the time of retrograde, reflecting on the issues and how and what retrograde can enhance for you. Again, I thank you all. God bless you. And again, have a glorious, glorious weekend. Thank you.